And with that subtle entrance, there she is, Anne Page.
Yeah. Just kind of drop out of the laser beam.
Yeah, it gets better every time, doesn't it? Your people are amazing.
They are.
What was your planet again?
Planet P. You want me to say it?
We have
a name for it now.
We had one of our very creative young contributors name the people from her planet.
We did.
Can we tell them?
Mm-hmm. Go for it. They're called Palians. The butterfly is a Palian butterfly, and the planet's Palian. And my people are called Palians.
So you are admitting...
Nothing.
Nothing. Well, it was a good try.
But that's what we are calling
okay.
it.
Okay, well, the eclipse is approaching.
Yeah.
The sun and the moon are in their positions, they're gliding
so
into
exciting.
Place. And in spite of what R51 did last week, we all understand that if you're going to look at the sun, you've got to have special sunglasses.
Yeah, they can't just
And not sunglasses, they've got to be solar glasses. If you look at these, not at the sun, but just around, you can't see anything. They're so opaque. You can get these all over. They're solar eclipse glasses. They don't cost very much, but if you're going to look at the sun, you really, really need to have some of these. Like I said before, if you don't have the glasses, you can take a large lens, put a piece of white paper here, pull the lens not close enough so it focuses and burns a hole in the paper, but farther away, and you'll actually see a projection image of the sun right on the piece of paper. If you haven't done that and you have a lens, just a simple magnifier lens, you should try it. First time I did it, I was shocked at how sharp it is. And it was really neat to be able to see the sunspots. The sun has spots on it. And the spots actually are places that aren't quite as hot as the rest of the sun. And the amount of sunspots on the sun varies, goes up and down in a 13-year cycle. Did you know that? And when the sun conditions are right, radio waves can skip all around the world. When they're not, you get static and you can't do long distance radio. Ham radio operators know that. So please don't look at the sun directly. If you're going to look at the sun, you can use these. Now, this is the kind of eclipse where there's no fiery dress around the sun. And that's because this eclipse, the moon is closer and so it completely blocks it. When all of the fire is gone, then you can look at it. If you're right in the path. If you're a little bit off, there'll be some of that fire around it. If there is that bright fire, please don't look at it because your eyesight is precious and you don't want to damage it. This message brought to you by NASA.
So what were your call? What was your call letters?
As a ham radio operator?
What were they?
Well, first of all, if I was from the United States, my call letters had to start with W, or K, because that's the letters assigned to the U.S.
Okay.
And depending on where you are in the United States, there's different zones, and so the next thing is the zone. The zone I lived in was Zone 7. Oh. And so my call letters were W7DOO.
W7DOO.
Yeah, my best friend was K7 PRJ.
Where'd he live?
He lived by me. And so he had to be Zone 7, but he happened to have a K. And it's interesting when you're saying your call letters over the radio, it's sometimes hard for people to hear a letter. So you say a word that starts with a letter. And so he would say, "This is Kilowatt 7, Papa, Rosemary, Jelly."
What'd you say?
Mine was D-O-O. This is W7. Yeah, mine was,
did you do that?
I would say Delta Oscar Oscar.
Whiskey Delta Oscar Oscar?
Or was Whiskey 7.
Whiskey 7.
It's going to be that kind of a day. So moving right forward. We've got serious stuff to talk about. Did you know that I brought notes?
I see that, actually.
Everything you're supposed to say is written right here All you have to do is read it.
Why do I need to learn that?
Oh. Well, it's simple.
I don't see the importance.
It's simple.
Okay.
You are reading that, aren't you? Yeah.
That's what it says, right?
You know,
I've asked that.
Everyone that participates on a regular basis with Science Live are going to find out sooner or later, so I guess we can just go ahead and tell you.
Okay.
You are all part of a project. Okay.
You told them that?
Yeah. So let me get back into the genealogy of this because I want you all to understand it.
Okay.
An amazing, amazing, amazing person in the history of science in the United States, especially applied science, what we call the science of putting science to work or inventioneering, was a guy named Thomas Edison. And Thomas Edison was in the forefront of many things, the telegraph, of course, the light bulb and the power systems to run the light bulb and the phonograph and motion pictures and a lot of things. He just, he has more patents than any other inventor, I believe anywhere in the world. And he created a lot of businesses and a lot of companies and a lot of good things came from his technology. Some of you know that Thomas Edison's dear friend was a guy named Henry Ford.
Very close friend.
Guy that started Ford Motor Company and built this big industry and started the assembly line, which brought the cost of cars way down. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to say something that some historians might disagree with. This is my own opinion, okay? And since scientists aren't necessarily good historians, the historians may write me out of the history on this, but I believe that Henry Ford was mentored by Thomas Edison. I think a lot of his success came from Thomas Edison, and they were very, 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 very close, dear friends. I understand that if you go to the Henry Ford Museum, up in Michigan, that you can actually see Thomas Edison's last breath.
That's what I heard.
Because Henry Ford caught it, trapped it, and put it in his museum with a lot of other very, very interesting things. They were very, very close friends. Well, along came another guy when Thomas Edison was already elderly, near the end of his career. He met a young man that had bright aspirations, a very brilliant, creative guy that was trying to make a career out of designing radios. Radios were brand new. People were just learning how to build them. So he'd design a radio, and then the next day he'd try and design one better. And he was trying to sell his designs, and he was basically starving to death. And he met Thomas Edison. And Thomas Edison was kind enough to share some time teaching this young man how to take his creative inventiveness and turn it into a profitable business. And the guy's name was William P. Lear, or Bill Lear. Bill Lear went on to do marvelous things, including making a radio small enough to fit in the dash of a car. And he and his associates created a company to make radios for cars, because before they had to be so big they wouldn't fit in the dash, you couldn't see out the window. And so they named their company Motor Radio, shortened later as Motorola. Mm-hmm. And he did so many things. The thing that most people know him best for is the Learjet, which is an executive jet that flies above the weather and it's fast and it's really a neat thing. Well, Bill Lear was also very prolific in his career and did many great things. When he came to the end of his career, and he was about the age that Thomas Edison won when Bill Lear met him, along came this young leather snapper, me, and I was introduced to Bill Lear when he came to visit my university where I was just graduating. Some of you know my history. I wanted to build hydrogen cars. I built the first one for the science fair in high school. And right before the science fair, I collected the exhaust because hydrogen cars are pollution-free, but I wanted to prove it, so I took the exhaust up to the university, ran it through a gas chromatograph, and found out it wasn't pollution-free. It had nitric oxide pollution, which was very disappointing, and I figured out, with a little help from my chemistry teacher, that that was coming because air was going into the engine to burn with the hydrogen. It was getting hot, and air is made up of oxygen and nitrogen, and these two combine together, and they form, oh no, a compound called nitric oxide.
No.
And no comes out the tailpipe, and then it gets out in the sun, especially in a place like Southern California that's nice and sunny, yeah. And it reacts with another oxygen ozone molecule and forms nitrogen dioxide, which is now a brown stinky gas, which then combines with rain to form nitric oxide and rains down as acid rain, and it's a bad pollution. So here I am at the science fair with my pollution-free car that creates nitric acid.
Yeah.
I almost wasn't going to go to the science fair. I thought this was bad, but you know what? It was a trip to go to Dallas. I was pretty excited, so I went. And the judges came around, told me about your project, and say, well, I built the world's first hydrogen car, the first pollution-free vehicle. Is it pollution-free? Well, it was until we tested the exhaust. And I remember the sweet judge says, well, you know, one thing I'll say for you, you're honest. Like, I should have not told him. It's pollution-free. But, you know, scientists...
They should be.
Don't fool themselves by fudging the results. Mm. They learn from the science and go on to do better. Well, I won a gold and silver award at the science fair, which I was very proud of. It got me a scholarship to go to college. So in the college, I had some goals. One of the goals was to graduate with the knowledge and ability to start a company to build hydrogen cars for the whole world. And the second goal was to be able to do research to figure out how to get rid of the nitric oxide.
Question.
Okay, and now for an interruption.
When did you have the goal to start the company? In high school or after?
Is that all?
It's important, yeah.
It's important?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you. Do you want me to tell the answer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't know. Actually, that goal of actually thinking about starting the company came in college.
Okay.
Because in high school, everything was simpler.
Oh, okay.
You know, in college, you start figuring it out. But I did figure out how to get rid of the nitric oxide.
Okay.
And that's a story for another day. But when I decided what to major in, the advisors that advise you on which major to get told me that I needed to major in physics if I was going to build hydrogen cars. And the chemist told me I got to major in chemistry to do hydrogen cars. And the engineer says you got to be an engineer. So I ended up with five majors.
You're smart.
Chemistry, physics, electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, and chemical engineering. And so then I said chemical twice, didn't I? Mechanical?
You said chemistry and chemical engineering.
Yeah, it's chemistry, chemical engineering, mechanical engineering, and electrical engineering. And I'm glad that I had such a broad background. It took me 5 years, including summer school, Christmas break, short semester, and everything, to complete all of these. And my last week of school, the vice president of research for the university brought this gentleman to see me. An elderly gentleman said, this is William P. Lear, and he's looking for someone to be a protege. And I thought to myself, I should have studied French. I don't know what a protégé is. But I learned that that's where you kind of mentor somebody. And so he came in and I had a little laboratory there. I showed him the things I was doing, the dreams, aspirations, and things I had for hydrogen. And he told the vice president, this is the student I'm looking for. And so Vice President Dr. Vernon said, Mr. Lear would like to invite you to move to where he lives and be mentored by him to pass on the things that he's learned from his career, hopefully giving you a jump start. And, you know, I had been going to school for 5 years, to say nothing about the 13 years of K-12. And I was ready. I had some job offers, and they were actually going to pay money, and money was something I didn't know much about. And so I asked Mr. Lear, I said, well, how much does it pay? And it was a real insult to him. Here he's offering this to me, and I'll never forget the answer, and it has stayed with me. It's actually changed me. He said, well, I'll tell you what. If you can spare a year or two of your precious time, in 3 years, you'll be a millionaire. I can do that.
He was pretty confident, wasn't he?
One week later, he came back to the city of where I lived in his Learjet, and he picked me up, and we took off straight up and over the mountain, and I went on my way to move into his home and to be mentored by one of the greatest minds that was walking planet Earth. Yeah. And I am so grateful that I had that opportunity. When my time was finished, and he said, okay, you're ready, go do your thing. I kind of thought maybe he'd give me a bunch of money. He didn't. He didn't put me on the jet and fly me home. He said, goodbye. It was done. It was a good experience. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot, but I didn't realize how valuable what I learned was. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize really what I had, but I was grateful for the experience. And he did pay me while I was being mentored, which was helpful. So I went home, drove home, and started my first little business. But what I learned very quickly is that he showed me how to make a project happen. And 3 years after he told me, if you'll give me 3 years of your precious time, you'll be a millionaire, that came true. And I started a hydrogen company, and all of a sudden, I had a lot of success. And you know what? There is no way that I could have done what I did in those short months from anything I learned at the university. It was what he taught me. And part of what he taught me was practical methods and things about how to do a project. A bigger part of what he taught me was about attitude and believing in myself and believing I could. And so I thank my lucky stars that Mr. Lear came through and chose me to be the person he mentored. When my company took off and all of a sudden I realized I didn't have $1 million, let alone me, that never had anything, drives a little broken down Ford Falcon car, I have $5 million. And so I called up Mr. Lear and I said, Mr. Lear, I just want you to know my company went public and I'm doing really well, just like you said I would. And he said, well, I'm glad to hear that. And I said, I have stock worth $1 million, which I'm sending to you to thank you for helping me find my way. And he said, Roger, I don't want your stock. I thought, no, you don't understand. This stock is just like cash. It's public stock. You can just, it's just like cash. He says, so now you're going to teach me about public companies.
I bet he had a way of saying that, didn't he?
Yeah, he did have a way of saying it. But he then went on, he said, a very long time ago, I had this conversation with my mentor, and he said, instead of paying me back, you find someone to pass it on to, so the chain will continue. And he says, I'm an old man, and I finally found you, and I have paid back my mentor. And that was the day I found out that he had been mentored by Thomas Edison. So all of you that are taking this Science Live thing as more than just, oh, I have to, but you're actually saying, I'm going to take this opportunity and just milk it for all it's worth. You are being mentored through me by Bill Lear, through Bill by Thomas Edison. Oh. And there is some magic in what I'm trying to tell you. And today I want to just come right out and show you some of the magic so that you don't have to guess what I'm talking about. Okay?
Okay.
And I even brought these notes.
You can see them.
In case, you know, something happens to me, you can just keep reading.
Nothing. Okay?
All right.
Not even good going there.
Okay. So one of the first things that Bill Lear taught me is that most people never achieve their goals in life because they don't really know what they are. And I thought, well. And I said, a lot of people kind of vaguely know what their goals are, but they don't really see what they want to do well enough so they can tell if they achieved it or not. So he says you need to have a clear vision of your goal. His goal was to create an airplane that executives could own and fly over the weather, and it was a very, very real goal. And I've told some of you the story about how he went home from work one day, got four chairs from the kitchen table, set two in front, two behind, got his wonderful wife, Moya, who, by the way, taught us how to eat a lot of things, like raw mushrooms and avocados and things we never knew about, which are now treasures to us. But anyway, he set Moya down in the chair on the right, and then he sat on the left. And he says, imagine you're in an airplane, a Learjet. And then he took her for the first ride in a Learjet, right there in their kitchen. The left seat's where the pilot sits. So, of course, that's where he was. And he took it off, and he told her all about it, what it was going to be able to do, and how it was going to have so much power, it'd take off and just go almost straight up. And it just was really, really exciting for him. And Moya's a wonderful person, and this is great, Bill. I know you can do it. And years later, the day came when it was time for the Learjet to fly for the very first time. And Bill Lear was very, very, very excited. And he's a pilot, and he's going to fly it. And the guys from the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, said, no, you need to have professional test pilots. And so he took two guys that tested military aircraft, and they took off, and the plane flew, and it was a wonderful thing. And Bill Lear watched. And then they started going home, and this is the part of the story that Moya told me and my wife. She said, you know, on the way home, he was very solemn, and she was just exuberant. It flew. It flew. I don't think she really knew it would fly until then. It flew, Bill. It flew.
She was so excited.
Yes, it did. Huh. And she says, why are you acting like this? This is the biggest day of your life. This is the day where your dream came true and your plane flew. And he said, Moya, my dream came true. Sitting in the kitchen in those chairs. To me, that's when I saw the vision of the airplane, how to build it. This is just one step along the way to turning this into a great legend and a great company. So you got to have a goal, and it's got to be clear enough, black and white enough that you're really can tell whether or not you achieved it. And most people never get past that goal. And I think the reason we don't really make that kind of a real goal is because we don't really believe we can do it. But I guarantee you can't do it if you don't have a goal. So he taught me to make them.
So we have a question from Dylan.
All right. I was hoping we'd hear from Dylan tonight. What's the Dylan, Bill?
He wants to know how you get a clear vision of your goal and to find a way to make it into something that's real.
Well, I think the real secret to that is paint a picture of a goal in your mind, and if you can't see it, your goal isn't clear. Mm. You've got to be able to really think what you'd like to achieve, and you've got to think it clear enough so that if you achieve it, you can tell, I did it. I achieved the goal. Here it was. I wanted to build hydrogen cars to replace all the gasoline cars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a big dream, but I dreamed it. I knew it would make the world better. It's 50 years later. 50 years. Well, am I that old? Yes.
You're that yes. young.
And it's starting to happen. It's starting to happen in a big way. And it took a while to convince people. There are a lot of people that thought they'd like to sell oil or something else along the way. But now we're starting to find out this is a great way to go. But I knew I wanted to make a whole hydrogen energy economy. And I told the story all around the world, and now it's really starting to be heard and catched on, and a lot of people are saying it. Now, after you have the goal of what you want to do, the next step that he taught me is you need to become the world's foremost authority on what you want to do. I said, well, wait a minute. No, you have to do your homework. You have to learn what other people have done and how far along they are and what problems they're having. You got to learn the state of the art. It's what scientists call it. And you have to master all of the skills that are needed to be able to build this dream and make it come true. Now, that's a lot of why I have devoted a major part of my life to helping young people acquire a useful education. Now, people say, why do you do that? I do that because that education is a foundation that you need to do almost anything that's significant in this world. And in education, we don't teach you how to build your hydrogen car. We don't teach you how to do the specific thing that you're going to invent as your goal because we don't even know what it is. So what do? We teach you foundational knowledge like mathematics and engineering and science, maybe even throw in a little bit of history and English, you know, to flavor it up. But we teach these foundational things. But what you really are being taught in Acelus is how to learn. And in my career, I studied 5 different fields, and I've got a composite degree of those 5 fields. But since I left the university, I've expanded that to about 15 fields. And at the university, I learned how to learn. I learned how to acquire knowledge. And when I want to do something, I don't let the facts stop me that I don't have a clue of how to do it.
That's true.
I go after learning it and learning new fields, and I'd love to learn new fields.
He does.
And it's a thrill. And I can learn a new field faster today than I could when I was a college student because I've really learned how. So you've got to really become a master at what you're doing. And my career at IST, which is our little university where Acelus originally was a graduate project, was a student project, someone that wanted to get a doctorate degree, and so they had to do research, they had to figure out how to do it. But the idea was, if we could use computers to leverage the learning process so that a person could gain knowledge faster and remember it longer and better than through the normal methods we were using on chalkboards in our school, it would make a great difference. And so a lot of science and research went into the Acelus learning system. And we now have found that we can not only accelerate learning, so a person in just part of a day can keep up with students going full time in a conventional style school, but also we can take a student that has gotten behind for any reason, but they've gotten behind and they need to catch up, and we can help them catch up. And that's why Acelus is being used by 9,000 schools, is because it's helping students catch up. And there's a lot of science in that. We can do 10 years of Science Live just going over the technology that's in here to help you get a good foundation and succeed. I am paying back Bill Lear for what he did for me by passing it on to you. And he didn't take a penny. in spite of all the wonderful things he did for me, he didn't take a penny. And I promised him I would do this. And I started looking for the person that I was going to have as my protege. And then I got this idea. With computer-based learning, I could have a jillion students. And I'll tell you what, somebody is going to say, is he serious? It may not sound realistic to some of you yet, but yes, I am absolutely serious. I believe that in this community of brilliant minds that do Science Live every week and do the other courses in Acellus, we are going to see some of the most amazing and important and significant inventions of the next 50 years. Wow. I really, really believe that. And that really gets me going.
I love it.
It just really, really gets me going. So here we are. So now, the other things that I've learned, you know, when I found out I had a little money and I could go buy some things and that, I learned that that didn't really fulfill me. And, you know, if people could learn a little bit about where happiness is hiding, and if we could figure out, I mean, it seems like everybody knows the way to get through life successfully is get lots of money. And I got to know a lot of people that have lots of money. In my career, I got to know a lot of people that had lots of money. And I noticed that those people and their children weren't happy. I thought, man, if I had that kind of money, I'd be so happy. But they're not. And then all of a sudden, I started saying, I wonder where happiness really is. And I noticed that the people that seemed to be the happiest were the ones that were focusing on the welfare and well-being of others. Yeah. And so somewhere along the way, I decided, that's what I want to do with my life. I want to make a place that is wonderful. And I'm here in Kansas City because it's a wonderful place, right in the middle, right in the heart of the United States. And I'm working at IST, and we're creating new technologies, and we're spinning those technologies off into companies. Some of you have heard of Silicon Valley. Man, what they've done is amazing. Mm-hmm. Right now, a lot of good people are leaving Silicon Valley. So I decided it's time to get a valley out here in Missouri. So we don't have sand, that's what's on the beach, and sand and circuits is kind of becoming obsolete. So I'm right here on Ambassador Drive. We have 8 buildings on Ambassador Drive that are now part of our campus. Mm-hmm. And so I decide, okay, Ambassador Drive is our new valley.
Okay. Like
and you look out there and it's no ups and no downs. There's no hills, there's no valleys. It's just flat. We're right at the Kansas City Airport. And I said, well, so we'll call it Cyber Valley. Because I believe one of the biggest problems facing mankind today is security, safety in the internet. We have a lot of bad things happening to a lot of people because people are breaking into other people's computers. And that's a tragedy, and it's going to go to a worse and a worse and worse state unless we figure out how to reinvent what we've done on this wonderful internet so that people are protected, their data is protected, their assets are protected, the power grid, the food production, energy is all protected. And so I started on a project about 18 years ago to develop a security system that would protect the internet. And a lot of my colleagues, very smart people, told me, Roger, that's impossible. A lot of people tried, but it's a very elusive thing. And you know, people are hacking into computers of schools and banks and other places, and they're making them pay ransomware to get their data back. And it's got to stop. And people's transactions, so many people are losing money because of security breaches. So I decided I was going to take it on. And it's one of the toughest challenges that I've ever taken on. We started with a product. Some of you have heard of Gold Key. I'll just show you a picture of a Gold Key here. This is a Gold Key. It's a USB token that we manufacture here, which I and Dr. John and I invented, which inserts into a computer. And if you have that key in your computer, you can secure your communications. And it solves one of the big problems with security. Those Gold Keys are being used by the US military. They really work. It's a step in the right direction. But solving the problem is so much bigger than just something to do with the Gold Key. And I realized to solve this, we're going to need to attack the problem from all sides. We need to develop a secure network. And so we started a company called Wideband. This is some of our wideband equipment. We manufacture these things. We have, if you're watching this image tonight, it's coming through wideband networking equipment. And right here, we invented and developed and launched Gigabit Ethernet. And I'm really, really proud of what we were able to do. 3 years before the IEEE was even willing to start creating a standard for gigabit networking, we were selling a commercial product and we made a lot of money. So we have the wideband piece. But another big piece that we have to make this thing so we can bolt it up and lock out the bad actors is we need to have a secure operating system. Now, you computer guys know that an operating system is a thing that you load on a computer when it first powers up. And when the operating system gets loaded, then you can load programs and do other things. But the operating system is the foundation upon which everything else runs. In the Billings computer, the operating system was the Billings operating system. We had to write our own, and we did. And so lo and behold, we started building some pretty amazing computers. This is clear back in the 1970s. We also developed a thing called a server. And the server ran the Billings operating system. And here is some guy, a movie star, I think.
Your celebrity, yeah, right
with
there.
With the Billings server.
That celebrity smile.
Which is what pioneered all the servers that we have today. A lot of people have done a lot of searching, but they've never found any server before this one. And it was kind of a milestone. Well, during the first 5 years of Microsoft, Bill Gates and his team developed their software on the Billings computer running the Billings operating system. And then I got out of the computer business and have been away. Now I came back. And the operating system today is Windows, it's Linux, it's Apple's operating system, OS X. There's another operating system for cell phones. If it happens to be an Apple phone, it's got iOS. If it happens to be an Android phone, it has Android. These are all operating systems. None of them are secure. And so I have put together a team that is right now writing a brand new operating system. It's an operating system that I have been conceiving for about 25 years. I call it Physics Operating System, and I spell it FSIX, stands for Functionally Structured Linux, or Unix. And Physics is the way you pronounce it. Physics operating system is being made to go on a server. If you combine Physics with Gold Key with wideband networking, you have a computer system that I think is going to stop computer crime and stabilize a lot of things in our world. Well, how do you do it? It's one thing just to create an operating system, but you have to create a magic operating system, something that has the features that will tackle the problems. And so to do that, to create the wideband networking, I had to learn two whole new fields. Mm-hmm. And the first physics cards that went in our, I mean, wideband cards that went in our computers were designed by me. They're the first electronic cards I ever designed myself. And I had to go back and learn a whole new field to be able to make them, because wideband was just three or four of us. And it grew into something that was very successful. So you have to have a dream. You have to have a project. And you have to bring it down into a practical, real-world version so you can see what it is. You need to dream big, but you need to dream clear. When you really, really, really have a clear vision of what you're going to do, then you can get excited about doing it. And important, you can get other people excited about it, people that will help you, people that might even invest in you. So this is something that hopefully you will learn as you go through your Science Live sessions, and especially when you become students at IST, which I hope many of you do. Now, we're running short on time, and I think you kind of have a little bit of what I wanted to say, but I just need to one more time remind you that last week when my AI fake copy, the guy over at Area 51, R51, when he was talking, he says, look at the sun through a magnifier. Please remember, don't do that. You do it the right way. And I just say, those of you that are corresponding with him, don't believe everything he says. he's kind of got a pretty high positive impression of himself, but I don't think he really understands how it all works. I have to tell you what happened this week. Well, we don't have much time. Do we have time to just show him real quick?
Yes.
Okay. Well, look what happened over at Area 51.
Okay. Hi, guys. Welcome to Area 51, where I've been making a lot of new inventions. In fact, I invented everything. Oh, can I show you my latest inventions? This one is so cool. A lot of people lose their keys, right? If they got one of these, not a problem, because when you lose your keys, you just fish them right back. This is really going to be popular. This one. This is an electronic bug. I invented this so when that guy in the gray shirt comes around and sprays your garden, kills all the little cute insects, this insect won't die because he's made out of plastic. It's my next.
Oh, but this one. Whoa, this one makes me shake with excitement. You pull it up like this. I invented this, you know. And you spray it, and it makes the squeaks go away. It makes the rust go away. Just does all kinds of things. But I'll let you in on just a little secret. This is my old invention. I'm working on a new one now. I call it WD-51. It's invented by 50. Now this one, this is special. Because you know, tall people are so lucky because they're up there and they can see far away, and little short people, they're down low. And they can't see hardly anything. So I invented this for them. And I took these special eyes and I mounted them in this head. And look, now they can see as tall as the tall people. Isn't that great? I invented that. It's really amazing. And this one, whoa. This one.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, you see, this is what it looks like from inside the face, looking in. Yeah, it looks like this. It's kind of all messed up. And you say, well, that's not so pretty, but you're wrong. It's very
pretty.
That was a surprise, wasn't it? Okay, now this last one. You can't tell anyone about this one, because this one's going to make R51 rich. Yeah, you see, people like to smell really good. That's why they wear perfume. Perfume. And you know, guys, they don't wear perfume. Perfume's for girls. Guys wear cologne. But this cologne, I found out, is really expensive. And good perfume, it's even more. So I thought, you know, there's got to be a way tell people they will have perfume and cologne. So I invented not a new perfume, not a new cologne. It's better than that. I'm a super inventor. I invented a way to make your own perfume. And you can carry it with you whenever you want perfume. There it is. And it's so wonderful. I'd like to show you my perfume creation. Oh. I call him Stinky. I named him. I said, aren't you just looking? He likes to eat. You give him some of these stink beans. Go away. And now, it's time to reveal the truth. Yeah. R51. R50. I invented everything.
I love it.
So one of the amazing Science Live team from Montana, Christopher Shiflett, came up with an invention. His invention was a slogan for a brand new t-shirt. And you saw R51 wearing it there. Mm-hmm. He came up with this slogan, long live R51, because he invented everything. So, Christopher, I'm sending you. You want to take that side?
I do.
That'd be good. I'm sending you a very short, long live R51 because I invented everything.
I love it.
So we'll be sending that to you. Other guys that have super invention of ideas to put on our shirts, we are right now building up the factory to manufacture a lot of garments that tell about R51 and Acellus and things. In fact, one of the big machines arrived today. We got one last week. But the reason we're building this new factory is because we see how much gold a lot of you are storing up in your Acellus courses.
They want to know what they can
get. And we're afraid if we open the store, it'll be sold out in 5 minutes. So we're getting ready to start producing in quantity. So if you want to be an inventor, if you invent, you come up with an idea for a shirt, you'll get one. We'll ship it to you. So start inventing and get ready for the science fair and study hard and change the world. See you next time. Thank you.